It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 434. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. You can send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. I have jam-packed show tonight with stories from the trenches. I'm going to talk about a server problem that I had to resolve that I was up pretty late with last week. Email and migrating users to Google Apps. I got a couple stories. And troubleshooting a router, a small home router. And I will talk about the steps that you go through to figure out what's going on. So before we get started, for the month of November, Movember, which is Men's Health Awareness, Instant House Call, they're putting their money where their mo is. And I will have links in the show notes where you can donate. If you haven't started the contest to grow a mustache yet, you can make a donation and qualify for a free instant house call software. And remember that this is the best remote control software that you can use for your clients and your customers. And you want to go to instanthousecall.com or click on the link on the left-hand side of the website. And don't forget to enter Mike Tech Show in the code, so you can get a free trial for 15 days. There's a new segment I'd like to introduce on the Mike Tech Show, and that is this week's Call That Girl's Tip of the Week. Give a listen.
Hello, listeners of the Mike Tech Show. I'm Lisa, the author of Call That Girl's Guide to Remote Support. We are new sponsors of the show, and each week we would like to offer you folks a good tip on remote support. And this week's tip is to remember to take advantage of those quick and easy small repairs you do for your clients. Ask them if you can take a minute to review a few things and ask more questions. Questions that lead to upsells, such as antivirus, backing up, and has their computer been slow lately? Remember, a small printer driver issue can lead to many more opportunities. To learn more about upselling strategies and tips on how to better service your clients, you can purchase my ebook at www.callthatgirl.biz/publications.
Thanks, Lisa. Great tip. You can purchase, as Lisa said, Call That Girl's Guide to Computer Remote Support. Everything you want to be able to increase revenue by performing remote support for clients, new customers, anybody around the world, you can help them easily, quickly be able to solve problems and solve problems that you would not think you can resolve remotely. And that's something you're going to learn, how to approach serious problems and be able to solve them and be able to make money. That's what it's all about. So great guide. Link will be in the show notes. There's a banner on the left-hand side of my website. Just click on that and purchase that guide. You will not regret it. Lisa offers a money-back guarantee, which she's never had to utilize. You will like that book. The first story I want to share with everyone, last week, Tuesday night, and I was checking my email before I went to bed. It was a little after midnight, and I looked, and I did not receive a backup confirmation from my largest retainer client. I usually get that around 10 o'clock, and depending on how much data, yeah, maybe sometimes 10:30, I'll get the email. And this is the backup that backs up to the cloud. So this is where they use the Envelock service, and the Shadow Protect backup has already happened a few hours before that, and I received no email. Now, usually I'll receive something. If it fails, it'll kick me out an email and tell me what happened, or, you know, it just failed. Well, I didn't get anything. So that concerned me. So I quickly went to take a look at all the systems that I have remote access to. And I looked and I could see every workstation server said it had been offline for the last few hours. I'm like, uh-oh, my clients, they'll be in at 7 a.m. the next morning. I got to take care of this. So I go up and my wife was just getting ready to go to sleep. And she says, what are you doing? I was like, well, I'm getting dressed. I got to head out. My client has a problem. So I get dressed. I head over. Luckily, they're not far away. And the server is in a state where it's off, but it's like half off, half on. And the not only off, but there are two amber lights for the power supplies on the front of this HP ProLiant. And then a blinking light, an amber light for the error. And I'm like, uh-oh. Now, both power supplies bad? That's unlikely. So I checked the power source, make sure they're going into two different UPSs. The UPSs are fine. There was no power issues to the facility because nothing else took a hit. All the workstations are up. Everything's running. Lights are on. So I power on the server, and I get one power supply comes up, but not the other. So the other one has no light at all. I check a plug, try a different outlet, try a wall outlet, just nothing. I got an error light on the front of the server. So I'm pretty sure as the server boots up, we got a bad power supply here. But why did the whole server go down? This is still in the back of my mind, and it's bothering me. Since it's hot pluggable, one of the things you can always try to do is just pull it out, put it back in, maybe reseating it, might reset something. That didn't work. So we have 4-hour response support, but only 8 to 5 during the week. So in the middle of the night, they'll take the phone call and they'll take help me out, but they can't dispatch someone in the middle of the night. I understand that, and that's what my client elected to purchase for the support. And the nice thing is it is under support, so I'm calling. It's now, after I've been working on everything, it's now about 1:30 in the morning, and I'm talking to HP. And what was nice, I did this remotely, so I was able to come home, relax, get on the phone, get my headset, and talk to them. And they wanted to remote in and check things, and I was like, it's the power supply. The light's off. So I finally got through to the guy that, you know, send me out a new power supply. This is really an incredible support story from this standpoint. While he's writing up everything, and he says, I'm almost done to give you the ticket number, he says, but I've placed the order for the part. I get a phone call while I have to put him on hold, and it's DHL calling me to make arrangements for delivery of the part for that morning, for that AM. We're now 2:30 in the morning, and they're going to be delivering that at 8:30 a.m. or sometime between 8:30 and 11:30, they said. I said, make it towards the 11:30. And so I get a chance to sleep a little bit, and I can, you know, meet them over there. And they're just going to drop the part off, so I don't even have to meet them. So I said, great. So I text my client and tell them everything that's happening. So when they wake up in the morning, they'll read the text and know that a power supply is coming. And when they receive it, text me, and then I'll come over and put it in. So I go over, I put it in, I get no light. So this weekend, I called HP. I said, we got a little more serious problem here. Either you sent me a defective power supply, or there's something more serious going on. And they said, that's probably the backplane needs to be replaced that both power supplies plug into, and you're going to need a new backplane. I said, ship me a new backplane and two power supplies. This backplane is not for mere mortals to put in by themselves. So I said, send an HP tech with it. So they came out yesterday. They came out Monday morning. And once the tech got the ticket in the morning, he called me on my cell phone. We made arrangements to meet at my client at noon So this way we could take it down during lunch, and it took an hour to take that server. And these ProLiants, you know, they're not light, so it takes two people to lift it. So I was there helping the HP tech, and it was an ugly little process with that board, the way it actually has a bend in it so it can come up at an angle and come out. It's like under the motherboard. It's tucked away. And then with all the cable management and all the things we had to get take away and the fans, and it was a good hour to put everything back together. Everything's running great. No error lights. And it's the point here is, one, making sure that you respond to your retainer client to give them the level of service that my client did not have experienced any outage and was so happy that I was watching the server and took care of it where the server wasn't down when they came in the morning. So that was beautiful. That's why I like all my retainer clients. I want to manage the backups. And a backup is happening every night, and I'm going to get a notification every night. And I'm going to take a look, and I'm going to see whether I got an email or not. Now, if they're workstation backups and they're things that are not mission critical and that fails, am I going to run out there in the middle of the night and take care of that? No. But a server? Yes. So I have a client that's, I have a few clients with servers, and I'm watching those backups. And if they are a retainer client and that server's down, I'm there. I don't care what time of day or night it is, holiday or not, and I'm on site and I'm addressing the issue. With that, I make sure it is mandatory when I take over an account that they have a maintenance contract with the hardware vendor. I can't manage all those pieces and parts for every single server that's out there. It's an impossibility. Whether it's Dell or HP or IBM, I make sure that they are going to have a maintenance contract, and I don't have to worry about hardware. I can get someone on site. I will be the first person to diagnose and take a look, and then work with the manufacturer to have them come out and dispatch a tech, has a part under his arm, to make the replacement. Or if I can take care of it, they can ship it out and I'll replace it. If it's memory, processor, a drive, power supplies, anything, it's plug and play, of course, I'll take care of it. But if it's a motherboard or something more serious that requires a lot of delicate work on hardware that I'm not experienced at the board level with, I'm going to have a tech come out. So that's very important. And I just wanted to share how I manage my business for consulting, where I do not build hardware. I won't do it. I can't support it like that. I will resell hardware with support contracts from the manufacturer, and then I will manage the support contract because I am the IT support for my client. That's, I guess, works best for me. My clients are happy. And it just works. So now, with that, I've been getting a lot of requests for Google Apps and the movement of mail, if you have, especially if you have less than 10 accounts, where for free, you can migrate to Google Apps. Now, I'm not even going to discuss the exact details on how to do it. I've done that before, but Carrie Holzman has the ultimate video from soup to nuts. Carrie covers everything in great detail. It's a great YouTube video, and I will have a link in the show notes for that whole process, and then I'm going to embed it into our Tech Vets website, because if you don't know this, maybe you're hearing this for the first time, Carrie and I host a podcast called Tech Vets at tech-vets.com. Now, this week, there's not going to be any show. Matter of fact, I have to email Carrie, unless a miracle happens tomorrow night and I'm available, which is, it's possible, since I'm recording the Mike Tech Show on Tuesday night because Thanksgiving on Thursday night. This being the short week, it's just going to be impossible to get together, but we'll have a show next week. Check that out. It's a great video. And one of the problems that I've ran into, though, as nice as those steps, you follow the steps, everything does not go according to plan sometimes, especially if you're migrating a customer that currently has email hosted somewhere else. I've talked about this in the past where I have a client right now where I am trying to make a DNS change. And we do not have access to their DNS. They're getting mail. Matter of fact, I'm going to call them out, this company. Their mail is Globat. And they have outages on occasions. They have, you know, very tight limits on how much email they can have. So my client wants to migrate to Google Apps to have their domain email be hosted by Gmail. And Globat does not own the DNS. Somebody did some website work for them a long, long time ago, and the DNS is controlled by a company that I don't have access to. I can't get access to. I can't even call them. And their domain was purchased at Network Solutions, so I have access to that. So here's the problem. When you go to start your Google Apps account, you have to verify that you own the domain. Now, there's two ways to verify. You can create a text record, which is an A record in the DNS, and they give you the text that you put there that proves you own the domain because you have total control of the DNS. The alternate method is to put an HTML file that Google generates, and you must put that in the root directory of your website. So since their web hosting is with Globat and there's no real website, it's just under construction because they don't have a website and they're not using a website, I put the file in there and Google can't see it. So I'm like, that's kind of strange. Why not? I call Globat today and I'm on the phone with them. And they say, well, the website account has been suspended. I said, how could that be? They're not even using it. Well, this unused website got hacked. And somebody put some bad PHP scripts in an obscure directory that was doing something bad. And so they suspended the account. Now, they didn't email my client. They posted a message on the control panel. My client doesn't access that control panel. They would never see that message. And this was months ago that this happened, that they suspended the account. Who would know? No one's using it. I said, let me access the file manager. So I get into the control panel. I'm at the file manager. I'm on the phone with the support. And the unreasonable tech, even though I deleted the files, would not close the case and unsuspend the account. He says, I have to submit another ticket. Someone else has to look at it. They got to redo a scan. I'm like, oh, please, come on. So I try to no avail. So I said, okay, just please submit this ticket, make it happen. Now, to their credit, tonight, before I went on the air, my client got the email that the suspension was lifted, and I went right into Google Apps. And I quickly verified that we owned the domain, and it worked. So we're halfway there. We now have Google stating that, knowing that we own the account. So now I can create the rest of the email accounts, and I can migrate by changing the MX records. Here's the difficult part. We're gonna do this on Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, because they're closed and it's their slowest day for business. They don't get any email that day. So that's a good day to make this change. So we put a stake in the ground and said, we're going to do it Friday. I'm going to log in to Network Solutions, to their domain account, and I am going to pull back and take ownership of the DNS and have Network Solutions DNS. Then I'm going to immediately fill it with the MX records for the Google email. And then all should be well, and they'll be getting their email via Google. And then what I'm going to make sure is that any files that they have on the FTP site at Globat, we're going to move them off. They're working with someone that I know that develops websites that's going to be giving them different hosting at a different company for their website, and he's doing the design. But I'm going to make sure we still maintain control of the DNS at Network Solutions. You never give up control of the DNS. And that happens because it's lazy techs that don't want to go to the work and properly change the DNS, where maybe they're going to be starting to do a website, they don't understand, and they just pull the DNS over to that website. So now with the website under our control, it's going to be with a different company. We're going to still maintain control of the DNS at Network Solutions, and that's how it should be. DNS maintained at the place where you've registered your domain, and that should be an official ICANN registrar that you can make changes to your DNS. Oh, boy, what a mess. I can't wait until this is resolved, and that's going to be on Friday. So I will let you know next week how that finalizes. Today, got a call from a referral from a client for a neighbor that was having wireless problems. This is how it started out. The comment was they cannot access their wireless device, wireless router. And I didn't know this, but one of the wired computers didn't work either to the internet. They have Comcast and they have a Cisco Linksys router and nothing's working, and they've rebooted everything, reset everything. I said, don't worry. I have a client I'm going to see in the morning, and I will call you when I'm finished and head over. So I headed over there, and the first thing I started to do was, let's see what I see. I unplug all of the wired connections, and I plug my laptop in, and one of the first things that I notice when I do an ipconfig/all, my Ethernet address is 169. Anytime you see 169 as the first octet of your IP address, you know there's a problem with DHCP. So already I know that router is not giving me an IP address. 169 is the default when you can't find an IP address. I reset the router, nothing. So now I'm thinking maybe there's a different process to reset the router after I put a pin in at the bottom. I hold it for a few seconds, does not work. So now I want to make sure Comcast is working. So I plug that directly into my laptop. I get right out. I get the IP address. I can connect to the internet. So I know the internet's up and working. I then look up the model for that router, and I find that you only have to hold it in for 10 seconds, and it should reset everything to the factory defaults, and the IP address should be 192.168.1.1. I can't see it. So I can't get an IP address. So I assign a static IP address of .2 to see if I can see it and maybe ping it. I use the default gateway as 192.168.1.1, and I also manually add that for the DNS. So putting the static IP info would help me because maybe DHCP is turned off or something's, you know, I couldn't get into it. And now I'm watching it. After a few minutes, I watch all the lights blink. It's in a constant reset mode. That means the router's cooked. That's it. Now my client tells me they have another router that they were using just for wireless that's on a couple flights up. Let me grab that and let's see if that can work. I get that down. I have to reset it. Now that resets properly. I go right in. Everything's working. I make sure I can get out to the internet. I plug in the Comcast into the internet Ethernet port. My laptop's in a different port. It's getting an IP address. I now can set the wireless. And instead of, now remember, I'm cleaning up and working with an install that was done from Geek Squad. So we'll just leave that out there and not comment. They had some obscure wireless name and password. Why? Use WPA2, have the client have a SID that's recognizable, and let them pick a password that is 8 characters that they can remember, okay? It's secure. As long as you have 8-character password and it's WPA2, you're good to go. So we pick a SID. We pick the right password. Everything's working. While I'm going to check the rest of the laptops and desktops in the house, she goes and gets a router. I write down a couple choices to go to Staples, get a router so we can add that to the upper floor. Now, when you're adding a second router, and I've said this, but maybe it's been a long time, and I'm going to remind everybody again, anytime you are setting up another wireless access point, if it's a router, you got to turn off DHCP, and you got to give it a static IP address that will not conflict with the IP addresses that's being given out on the network. And now you can make sure that everybody is on the same network and you're not creating another network. So here's what happens. When you want to make a router an access point, you got to dummy it down. When you get the Ethernet cable that's coming up from the other router, you plug it into one of the standard four ports, not the internet or WAN port. Do not put it in there, because then you're going to create a secondary network. You don't want to do that. So you plug it in one of the regular ports. Now, you got to do this offline. So I have to set a static IP address for my laptop. Connect in. I change it to a static IP address that can exist on the network. An example. We're giving out IP addresses on the first router that's in the basement. 192.168.1.100. And up. The router itself is .1. So that means we have a nice range to be able to give a static IP address. I'll either make it .2 or .10. So I made this one .10, static IP address, turned off the DHCP, gave the SID for that wireless the name -02, because we have an 01, we have an 02, gave it the same password. So everybody in the house, if they connect to both of them with the same password, whichever one's going to have the strongest signal, they're going to get connected to. So this is how you maintain multiple wireless access points on the same network at one location. It worked beautifully. The whole thing and making sure all their laptops were set, iPhones were working. They had some other questions for some other things. It was a 2-hour process. And you know what? You make sure they're happy and they're thrilled, and there's going to be more work. And that's why you want to do everything you can to satisfy your client, especially a new client. And it doesn't matter. To me, they're all the same, whether they've been with me for years or I just met them. You try to have a high level of service. Take care of everything, answer all the questions, make sure they're happy and everything's working. Give them a few business cards so this way they'll pass them out, hopefully. So there could be more work because there's other devices and TVs and things that may need to be connected. And now I don't do the physical wiring. That's where I bring in an electrician. Know your limitations. If you're not good at wiring, don't wire. Get someone that does. You know, do what you do best and don't overextend yourself, because you're going to get into trouble and someone's not going to be happy. So we got to keep everybody happy, and we want to make sure that we have high standards for our work. That's just a couple of the jobs that I've been working on the past week. There's so many. Every day there's a new challenge and something different. With that, let's get to just a couple emails here. And this is from Jeff, and he says, this may be a no-brainer question, but I thought I'd ask, do you know any business that is using Google Voice rather than 8x8 or another professional VoIP solution? What if a customer had Google Apps for Business? Would that make the Google Voice solution any easier to use? Not really, but, you know, it's nice to be all, you know, centric like that. Just a thought. Your show is great, and I learn something every time I listen. I never considered Google Voice as a replacement for a whole PBX system. I look at that as a one-off great IVR in the cloud for answering and then only forwarding to one number. I don't think it can replace a full-blown professional voicemail system for a business. And that's why I was excited about 8x8 and all their features, and the price is right. I don't see Google Voice playing in that space. If anyone else has taken Google Voice to that level and you're doing things with it that I'm unaware of, let me know. That would be a great email or voicemail to send me. From Daniel, I was watching Macmost Now 789. Gary was showing ways to use password protection. His demonstration of Evernote looked like it was the closest to what you are looking for. That's very interesting, but we would have to create an Evernote account for each one of the clients that has a USB stick, and that could be a lot of extra work. But I like the idea of having the files and having everything protected where you can have Evernote portable on a USB stick, which, of course, you can lock down and password protect. I like the idea. Thank you for sharing that. This is from Kyle, and the subject: to encrypt your customer's USB thumb drive for a no-brainer operation. The free version is good for up to 2 gig, maybe all you need. And thanks for the great show. And this is Kyle in Ohio, and this is USBSafeguard.com. I am absolutely checking that out. This is number one priority this weekend. I must solve this problem. A follow-up from Larry, who bought the HP switch that I like and was going to use it as a router, and you really can't. And this is a great response from Larry. Mike, you never implied the HP ProCurve switch could be used as a router. I thunk that all up myself. I'm not going to return the switch as you suggested because I am everything you mentioned. I'm a super geek technician and consultant for some small business, and I may just need something like this for a client someday. Thanks for addressing this issue on the show and giving a quick tutorial on the switch. I'm going to eat the dog food and become a student of VLANs now that I'm a proud owner of the HP switch. Awesome. I'm so glad to hear that, Larry. Also, another comment. The switch is whisper quiet. It is why I use that switch here, and you'll never hear it. There are no fans. It stays cool, but you do not have noisy fans that can spin out of control and cause noise. It's a super quiet switch that does not overheat. So there's some other advantages I forgot to mention last week. I have another question now. I have an 8-port router connected to this 24-port switch. Okay, cool. Just how many ports can a router handle using DHCP? Oh, boy, you got unlimited. But remember, from not so much from a port standpoint, but from an IP address standpoint. Now, we can get into complicated DHCPs, but figure you can only give away 253 IP addresses. There's really no limit. You could daisy chain as many connections, but you want to be careful. You don't want to create too many hops. You don't want to create a circular reference where connections that could get confused, where you maybe they wouldn't find the other switch or router. So you want to be doing this like a hub and spokes of a wheel. Think of it like that. Do you know how many connections can be made to an 8-port or even a 4-port router? I like to learn about this also. What is it called? I can't find any info in my router's manual about how many devices could be hooked up. Could I actually have a 24-port switch to every port to the router? Is that possible? Yes, it is. But be careful. How many connections can that router handle? And you make a great point here. So hold on. Sorry if it got a little weird there. No, you didn't. And I hope you have time to address this question. It's a great question. You technically could have, if you had an 8-port router and there was truly 8 ports available, you could have 8 24-port switches all connecting there. Here's the thing. If I'm connected to 24-port switch 1 over here, and I'm connecting another computer to the secondary 24-port switch, and they need to talk to each other. Now they're going back to the router. So how many MAC addresses can that router handle? How much memory does that router have to be able to handle if you had a computer at each one of those ports? A little home router would burn up. It would not handle all of that traffic. And that's why they make bigger, heavy-duty routers to be able to handle the load and all that traffic. So it's not so much how many switches you have connected, how many active devices that are talking, that are connected across all those switches. And think of where they could all converge and make sure that where they converge, it's sized properly. Hope that makes sense. That was the last email. I can't believe I'm catching up on email and taking care of everything. This Thanksgiving holiday, I want to wish everybody have a great, happy Thanksgiving. Have a safe holiday. I do have some independent music I'm going to be playing. I want to take a moment and wish your families just have a great Thanksgiving. Hope you have a great day. And give thanks to everything that you have. I know I am. I'm giving thanks to not only my family and everybody being healthy, but to everything that's been happening with not only my podcasts and my business, but everything's going well. I'm just super happy and very thankful for that. This could be the first Black Friday that I am not participating in as a customer, going out and looking for that item. My favorite place, Staples, they've disappointed me. There's nothing there. There's no carrot to drag me out early in the morning. Usually there's something. And it's usually something very different. It's not that computer. It's maybe that inexpensive mouse and I can buy 20 of them, or that great backlit keyboard I got a few years ago from the Logitech, that was, you know, $79 keyboard for $29. I'm there, you know. The items just aren't there to get me out early this in the morning. So I'm not going to be participating in that. But if you are and you're not going out, let's say you're not going out, you're sitting back, and you're going to use Amazon, please use my link. Amazon's going to be having incredible deals all week. And it's Christmas time. You got to do your shopping. You want to buy. Use my Amazon link, amazon.mikenation.net or MikeTechShow.com/Amazon. You have that big Amazon ad on the left-hand side of my website. Please use it, share it, spread the word. It helps support the show. And I can't think of anything greater than that you could do for me. A couple things. Support my sponsors. Support the show by using the Amazon link. I have some interesting music that was sent to me by Kate. Or she sent me the link. The group is called Smith's Cloud, so she couldn't resist. And with that being the group name, the song is A Change of Days. Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up.
You shake it, baby, all day and all night. You're getting tired of the wait. Let's throw a wrench into the notes and a rhyme, and we'll call it a change of days. In all the changes of the water and wine, I see the metaphor this way. Let's throw a wrench into the space and time for the sake of a change of days. So come on, all you people, ain't it hard for you to know? Celebrate in all the things you say. The part where everything everything is saved or explodes, and we'll call it a change of days. Say, can you see the shiny place in the sky? Sick of your wandering through the haze. They say we go to a better place when we die, and they call it a change of days. And they call it a change of days.
Thank you, Kate, for sending me that link. The song is A Change of Days and the group Smith's Cloud. How could I resist? So with that, I want to wish everybody again have a great and happy Thanksgiving. Have a safe holiday. And I will see you back here at the normal time on Thursday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. So next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.